Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, folks. As evidence mounts in support of the fact that Iran is responsible for the drone attack on Saudi Arabia's oil production facilities, these facilities account for and are responsible for as much as half of the Saudi capacity. 5 days post-incident, the president settled on broadened economic sanctions on Iran as an initial response. The international community is trying to figure out what those sanctions may look like, and more importantly, whether there is an appetite to support same. So where are we, and where do we go from here? Jim Carafano, Vice President Catherine and Shelby Cullum, Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation, joins us. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be with you.
So, Jim, as this continues to reveal itself, it looks as though the Saudis firmly believe that Iran is responsible for this drone attack. And, you know, the president 5 days later says we're going to increase our strategy, I guess, referred to as maximum pressure. Does this work, and where do we end up?
Yeah. Well, first of all, what are we going to do in response to the attack? I think the administration's actually been pretty clear, and as we've seen this drag out, when the United States says all options are on the table, that's just kind of diplomatic speak or locked and loaded for we don't know what we're going to do yet. We're not going to tell you.
Right. Posturing.
What we're going to do is this is an attack on Saudi's sovereign territory. It's really the Saudis' responsibility for that. We're going to essentially tell the Saudis, and I think what we have is, okay, you've got the lead. You have to decide how to respond, and we will support you. I think the reality is Saudis are very risk-averse. They're likely to do nothing in terms of an overt response. Now, that's the public side. What the U.S. will probably do on the other side is, and Trump's been very consistent in this day, particularly when dealing with Iran, is you know, he doesn't fight fair. It's like, you know, you punch me in the jaw, I don't punch back. I hit you in a way in which you cannot hit me back. Because I mean, the president publicly stated he's not really interested in a war. He's not really interested in escalating military confrontations. But he is interested in hurting the Iranians. And so hurting him in ways that they really can't stop and they really can't respond to. So, for example, after they shot down the U.S. drone, we didn't drop a bomb and kill some IRGC guys. Essentially, what the U.S. did is they cut off one of the few remaining ways Iranians had to move oil, which was transporting it to Syria. And they did that by essentially calling out the Europeans and saying, look, you've got sanctions on oil going to Syria. You've got to block this, right? And that was kind of another turning of the screw. And, you know, when people hear this country, there's always more things you can do on sanctions. In part because the other guy is constantly looking for ways to avoid the sanctions. So when you put something in place, they just try to find some other way to do that. And there's always things that you can do to make things more harder. And essentially, it looks like right now, that's what the U.S. is going to do.
So where are we? It seems as though one of the biggest violators of the sanctions so far has been China, and then probably second to them, Russia. So where do we go as it relates to that? Because obviously that's the workaround that you're talking about that they try to do to try to ease the implications or the results of these sanctions on Iran.
Yeah, but that's just not working, right? What do the Iranians have, Bill?
Oil,
right? And the Chinese buy their oil. Okay, the Chinese have done that. And what's happening? So now literally the Chinese are sitting on millions and millions of Iranian barrels of oil that they have absolutely no use for.
Yeah.
And that is a trickle of money that is not solving Iran's problem. So this somehow the Russia-China thing is a get-out-of-jail-free card. And, you know, they just announced the Chinese and the Iranians announced a $280 billion investment of the Chinese in Iranian oil infrastructure. Well, how's that going to work? I mean, why would the Chinese spend $280 billion to build an Iranian infrastructure for oil they don't really need? Why would the Iranian, and they're not going to give that to the, they're going to loan that. Are the Iranians really going to borrow $280 billion from the Chinese? Because they know that essentially the Chinese will just take over their oil industry. So there's no easy answer. And why are the Chinese, why are the Iranians doing this? They're doing this because they are really frustrated and there's no way to break out of this box. So they keep punching, hoping to do that. But, you know, it's very unlikely that that Trump's going to back off.
So the predetermined response that Iran wants is actually for us to start taking some type of retaliatory military strike.
Well, that's actually, they don't want that. What they want is for the United States to say, okay, never mind, you guys are too dangerous, we'll take the pressure off. Or for, or get the Europeans to force us to take the pressure off, which this isn't going to work. I mean, they don't really want to get into a military conflict. I mean, the bolstering and everything else is, you know, they can't really afford to get into a war, and especially with a shooting war in the United States, because we're going to hurt them a heck of a lot more than they hurt us.
Yeah. Now, and so, so does this just back and forth go on now for a period of time? And I would guess it's safe to say then, Jim, that time is actually on our side, not theirs.
I think the Iranian strategy is, if we get a different president, you know, they'll go back to the Iran deal. And I think that's their plan. But the problem with that is an election's 18 months down the road. And if you're Iran, you just can't sit around for 18 months and look like a punching bag. So they're looking for ways to look tough and aggressive in the region. Because in this region, if you're not tough and aggressive, you know, it's basically you put out a kick me sign. So they want to be dangerous. They want to be threatening. But on the other hand, they don't want to start World War III.
Yeah. So the visit that the Iranian officials, I believe, made with Putin the other day, more show than substance?
You look, if Putin could solve their problems, they wouldn't have problems.
Right.
I mean, it's just, people say, well, they've got Russia and China. That's their get-out-of-jail-free card. Okay, well, if that's their terrific, you know, allies that can solve all their problems, how come their economy is in shatters and they're having to do incredibly dangerous things? You know, it's obviously the Russians and the Chinese don't have the answers for them.
So this is more than desperate people doing desperate things, because if no one really believes this, that, you know, this was really show and not much substance, then they're almost really at the end of the road for them anyway. They have no options.
Right. Now, on the other hand, look, this is an authoritarian regime which has a very strong control over the country, and they do have dangerous, terrible things they can do. They can tough this out for 18 months. I have no doubt about that. The question is, what do they do if Trump gets reelected? Then I think they're at the crossroads. You know, what are you going to do? Get a nuclear weapon? Well, that'll solve all your problems. Because, first of all, get a nuclear weapon and hope, cross your fingers that the Israelis don't bomb the hell out of you.
You have one or you have two, and the others have 25 times
as many. Yeah, what are you going to do? Eat them? I mean, right. This is the North Korea. North Korea went nuclear. Are they better off now? Have they solved all their problems?
No.
You know?
No.
That's the problem. The Iranians have they put themselves in a very, very difficult spot.
And you believe that the Saudi response is going to be wait and see.
I think the Saudis will do things, but I doubt they will do a retaliatory strike.
Yeah.
We already saw part of what they're going to do is, you know, the Saudis and the UAE were very reluctant to join the maritime patrols, keeping the straits open. Basically, so let the U.S. do that. Well, now they're going to join that.
Do you see that our allies, because some have been reticent to kind of jump on board with us as it relates to these sanctions? I know the Brits have, but, you know, not a lot of others.
Well, the reality is they have to respect them, because the way it works is, you want to do a deal with Iran, fine, but then you can't do a deal with the United States. I mean, right. The Iranian market is nothing. There's no money in there. And so basically, it's all just for show. The Europeans really can't do anything. And here's the deal. This is an interesting thing, which I don't think a lot of people know about. The UN sanctions could actually be reimposed, because the Iranians, by their own admission, have now violated the Iran agreement by increasing their enrichment of uranium. So they're in breach of the agreement. All that has to happen is that a party to the agreement, which means we can't do it because we're not part of the agreement, goes to back to the UN Security Council and says Iran is in violation. And then unless the UN Security Council can vote by a majority vote to continue the sanctions relief, but the UN sanctions actually have to snap back. And so if now obviously the Russians and the Chinese wouldn't do this, but if the and probably not the French, but if the British did this, then all the UN sanctions, not just the US sanctions, all the UN sanctions would have to be imposed on Iran, and that would include Russia and China doing business with Iran.
Could that be what President Trump is actually talking about in increasing these sanctions, knowing that he kind of has that card in his deck?
I don't know. Yeah. It's a short answer. Because we can't do that. The British would have to do it.
The British would have to do it.
Because we're not a party to the treaty anymore. And if the British did it, they would be clearly breaking with the Germans and the French. I don't think they would do that right now because they're right in the middle of Brexit. But when Brexit's over, they might.
How much would it actually strengthen the U.S. position if our allies did openly support the position that we have as it relates to these sanctions?
It would. We've cut off 90% of their oil revenue.
Right.
So it's like you're 90%
international diplomacy, though, is a lot of smoke and mirrors, and you know,
yeah,
and a lot of historic protocols and things, and. So it seems to me that the showmanship of the diplomacy, in some respect, is every bit as important as the actual meat on the bone sometimes.
Yeah, no, it would definitely make the Iranians even more desperate, right? But the other thing is, and people have to – we have to watch Korea, North Korea, and Iran because these things go together, right?
Right.
If the North Koreans actually come to the table and do a deal and give up their nuclear weapons, that really puts Iran in a very difficult position, right? If the North Koreans can do that, why don't you do that? On the other hand, if the North Koreans come to the table and they hoodwink Trump and do some kind of lame deal, well, then the Iranians will hold out to say, well, we can get a lame deal too, right? So I think we forget, but we kind of have to keep an eye on both of those things. And there's going to be some movement on the North Korean negotiating front here in the next couple of months.
It's amazing how this is all interrelated. It works in a vacuum. It doesn't. It kind of moves back and forth. And it's one of the things, as kind of an outsider, not someone that's really been on the inside of these types of issues, looking at it. And I think for our listening audience as well, it gets really confusing of all the pieces and parts that are moving on the chessboard.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, to kind of simplify it down to, like, what does a guy going to Walmart care, right? Is there going to be a war? Probably not. Is it going to affect the price at the gas pump? Probably not, because right now the oil. So what it really mean for Americans? What it really means for Americans is it's not really a big deal for you.
Yeah. And I think that's the sense that a lot of folks are getting. And although, because we are in the midst of this presidential election season, things
right.
get kind of blown out, a lot of puffing going on around these issues on both sides.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's what creates a little bit of the angst and anxiety amongst the electorate.
Absolutely. But I think, again, as you – right. I think Americans are kind of a practical people, though. They look as anything – you know, we keep hearing these war scares. You know, this guy's going to drag us into a war. It's not happening. You know, we keep hearing these, you know – oh, my God, you know, we're going to have an energy not happening. And I think they just kind of – what they don't know who's right, who's wrong. They just push that off to the side.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, which maybe – honestly, to be honest, I'm not so sure I would do any different except that I get paid to pay attention to all this stuff.
Right. Jim Carafano, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Really enjoyed it. Let's do it again.
All righty. It's Jim Carafano with the Heritage Foundation, Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy. I want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. Are you concerned about the situation in the Middle East that it could deteriorate into a serious international crisis? Want to hear from you. We'll be right back. So what do you think on a Blue Runner opinion poll? You concern a situation in the Middle East could deteriorate into a serious international crisis? We're split 50-50 on that answer. You know, and after talking to Jim Carafano, someone that I've kind of followed and listened to as it relates to those issues, he has a very practical way of putting things in what otherwise seems to be a very complex situation, and that's what I like about him. He cuts to the chase. Let's go to Barry on line two out there in Metairie. Barry, welcome to the show.
I appreciate you. Hey, look, Newell, thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
There was a phone conversation that went on between Jimmy Carter and Donald Trump, and the world needs to listen. Immediately, there's silence that's going on in Washington. When he calls in and tells Trump, there will be no war. And that's exactly what he said. That's incredible. Incredible. The guy is 95 years old. But if you don't think he has power, you're seriously mistaken. He just laid down the law. We will not go to war.
Yeah, it seems as though that's Trump's approach at the present time, that he doesn't want that. And what I liked about, did you hear what Jim Carafano had to say?
I did.
He said two things that I thought was interesting. He said the approach that the Trump administration has taken are measures that Iran can't stop and they can't respond to. So you can always respond to a military attack. But when you start talking about these sanctions, there's no alternatives for them. There's nothing that they can actually respond to defeat that back. And I recognized it, but I hadn't really thought about it in those terms. And when he said it, it struck me that it seems to make more sense than not. Your thoughts?
You know, when Jimmy called Trump, and I can assure you I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to hear that conversation, but what happens in this situation, in the heat of the moment, everybody gets excited. In Iran, I'm sure they have evidence, they have proof, they have everything else, but his advice to Trump was just everybody calm down. Everybody calm. There will be no war, and period. There's no war. And what we need to do is figure out who needs help. What a humanitarian. I mean, you just got to love that guy. I'm a Republican, and I hated that 400-some-odd days we were held hostage under his presidency. I mean, that was just unbelievable. But at the same time, you got to love this guy. To have that kind of power at 95 years old calling in and telling Trump what he's going to do.
Well, I'm not so sure that it went down that way, but I think it's a testament on both sides, one that's willing to receive the advice and the other that's willing to give it.
And you notice there's been no tweets, nothing, except that everybody needs to calm. Everyone needs to calm down.
Yeah.
And yes, they attacked us. They attacked our interests. They attacked Saudi Arabia. And his response is, well, we need to help these people.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how long they're going to be able to take on these economic sanctions and this strategy of maximum pressure that's been utilized by the United States. Few of our allies have supported us in that endeavor, not enough in my view. And that's why I asked the question of Jim Carafano as to whether or not it would be of consequence if more folks actually publicly spoke out in support of this. I didn't connect the dots either as it relates to the UN sanctions that could be reimposed. Part of the friction that has been out there between the U.S. and the UN is that the UN sometimes is impotent and they don't really do what they ought to be doing. And obviously, if Iran now has said that they are in violation of the treaty, it would seem to me that would stimulate the UN to take the necessary action moving forward. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Russia, China has a lot of input and they put pressure on the UN to not do that. Obviously, they've been on the other side trying to disrupt this issue for us and have tried to hold at a bay some of our allies from coming out publicly in favor of these sanctions. Now it's a little bit of a different game, especially if they have the necessary evidence to link Iran directly to the use of this drone attack on their production facilities, which, by the way, eliminated about half of their production capacity. That doesn't mean that we're going to have an oil shortage by any stretch of the imagination, because, as Jim pointed out, the whole world is awash in oil right now and is not really in that crisis situation as it relates to that. So I think one of the interesting things is going to be whether or not the president diplomatically can move this issue off of our table and onto the table of the UN to add this additional pressure to see where that ultimately ends. Barry, thanks so much for the call. Go ahead, Barry. Go ahead.
What strikes me is it takes wisdom of an elder to literally go, okay, look, what are we going to do? We're going to hurt women, children, the working man. And in Iran, believe it or not, there are guys who go to work every day. They got a family. They got children. But
Barry, that's what's going on now. That's the whole purpose of these sanctions, is to try and move the masses of the population in Iran to put as much pressure on the leadership there, because what's going to ultimately happen is the country is going to be starved on any number of fronts. And the question really is for the leadership in Iran as to how much they're willing to have their population suffer as it relates to this because of these sanctions. So they've really just drilled down that no trade is going in and out of Iran. And if they continue this maximum pressure strategy in the hopes of saving lives that would be lost to military action, and as you well know, it's hard to be discriminate once the military starts, that ball's in their court.
Well, what strikes me as very unusual warfare is when government buildings, and we know how to take out government buildings. I mean, we can literally go in, first off, take out all communications, take out all satellite technology, take out everything, and put them in the dark, all power grids, all sewage, all everything. And who suffers?
The population suffers, right? And that's what the president, I think, has tried to avoid thus far, and has tried to ratchet down the pressure as it relates to import-export coming in and out of that country to start to feel that pain. This is a terrorist regime. Let us not, think anything to the contrary. So we say that they will go months and months and months and months, and that's okay with them, and that's okay that the people they represent will continue to have pain, and a good majority of those folks don't mind it, quite frankly, for the purposes of the fact that they don't like the West. So it's going to be interesting to see how this chess game is ultimately played out and how much pain they're just willing to accept.
Well, the world does not accept one fact. And the fact is, the United States of America can do surgical strikes, where we take out all government buildings, take out exactly what we want to take out, and without killing people. I mean, at broad, it's not a carpet bombing deal. It's right. Literally surgical strikes that take out specific targets. And I think that's what needs to happen. I actually believe the regime needs to leave power. And the people obviously cannot, because they have designed their government and their system to where the common guys cannot form any kind of they're not even allowed to get together in groups over there.
No, I understand they're not allowed to create a resistance in an organized way. But the leaders of Iran have to face their population daily and see what the detrimental effects are as a result of these sanctions and the maximum pressure strategy. And so, I mean, that's a reality that they have to face every day. And I do agree with Jim Carafano here. They're looking at an 18-month window. They're looking at possible relief being we don't elect a Republican, Donald Trump. We elect one of the Democrats that, you know, have a whole different philosophy as it relates to foreign policy and a whole different risk threshold, far different than mine. And it's one of the biggest concerns that I've had with their international diplomacy. I was not a fan of the Iran deal, not from day one, although I was not a talk show host at the time. But the more I read about it, the less I liked it. And I thought, you know, there was messages, subliminal messaging, actually, more so about things that we did that didn't initially reveal itself until many months later, and in some cases years, as to how we approached that situation that I thought was horrible. And the posturing that we had was horrible. And
I think me and you both can agree on one thing, and that is there needs to be a change of leadership. And in that country, it's all about religion. Everything. It's about elders.
Yeah, but
the
problem is how do we get to that and really save ourselves? You know, where we start the disruption of all of these governments out there. That foreign policy hadn't worked well, going back to what we did in Chile, going back to what we did in Argentina, going back to what we've done in Panama, what we've done in Nicaragua, what we did, so forth and so on, and the list goes on and on. It's never led to really a successful foreign policy for us, one that we were very proud of. Barry, thank you for the call. Got to get to a break. Want to hear from you. 260-1870. Are you concerned about the situation in the Middle East? Could it deteriorate into a serious international crisis? We'll be right back. We're back, and we'll go to the talk lines. Olu on line one. What say you, Olu?
Yes, sir. How are you today, sir?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Good. Look at it. 9/11, it was Saudi Arabia citizen. They kill our own citizen, 3,500 people. The journalist that was killed.
Jamal Khashoggi.
Yes, sir. It was by Saudi Arabia. Totalitarian governors. Saudi Arabia, we went to Iraq. They told us it's going to cost $50 billion. We are very unsuccessful in Iraq. We give it to the Shia government. We went to Syria. We caused a lot of immigration to Europe. We went to Afghanistan. It's still costing us almost about $1 trillion. So what I'm saying is we have to think twice to go to Iran, because Iran can constitute a lot of problem for us because of the Shiite influence in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq. Because right now the Shiites are controlling the governance in Iraq. So we have to be very careful before we make any move to go to. I'm not saying I will support the ideas for us to go there, but we have to navigate ourselves very carefully. That is what I have to say.
Are you pleased with the measured approach that the president has taken thus far with Iran?
I agree with him. Navigate very slowly before you put your hand into what is going to cost us a lot of money, a lot of human loss and everything. Let him take his time and weigh all the consequences before we go out there and be fighting again. You see? So I really support him on that. Don't just rush there to Iran. by bombing or do a whole lot of any other thing that can cause us a lot of other problems in the Middle East.
Absolutely. Olu, thank you so much for the call. I actually agree
thank
with you.
Thank you very much.
I agree with you, Olu. I think we need to take a very measured approach to this because there are huge downstream implications that we need to consider. And before we start putting our own military and the lives of the men and women that serve there at risk, I think that we should explore the alternatives first before we act and take a more measured approach. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. Folks, I'm going to be out at Northern Tool at 6851 Veterans on Saturday from 11 to 1 for the grand opening of that store. Northern Tool and Equipment on Veterans Boulevard, 11 to 1. 6851 Veterans, come out and see me out there. They're going to be giving away some prizes. They'll be giving away also some discount cards. So come out and give us a shout. Say hello. We'll be out there. Also, later on the show today, it's Saints Thursday. You can lock it in today, Saints fans. WWL, we're going to be giving away a Saints game experience that you'll want to win. Today and every Thursday now, from now till December 12th, win a pair of Saints home tickets on my show, plus a pair of tickets to Bullseye Event Group Saints VIP tailgate experience in Benson Tower. And here's what you're going to get for that experience. 3 hours before kickoff of the Saints home game, all you can eat and drink. Premium open bar and delicious buffet from the Food Network celebrity chef Aaron May. I had Aaron on the show. He is incredibly excited about what they're offering out there. I've checked in with some folks that actually went to the first experience. They actually had a great time and loved it. So you could just listen to us between 10 and 1 today and be ready. When Bobby Hebert says, who dat? I'll give you the number to call in. You pick up your phone and dial in. And if you're the eighth caller, you'll be who datting with the rest of the Saints Nation. Listen and win. And this is going to be for the Dallas game, their next home game when after this weekend's Seattle game. So we look forward to that as well. In the next hour, we're going to be talking to John Glazer, Director of Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. So we have a new national security advisor, and we'll find out about that situation. Obviously, there are a lot of things floating around internationally to be concerned of, a lot of moving pieces and parts that he's going to have to bring together the team in a collaborative effort. It seems as though that may have been a problem before. We'll try and find out from John Glazer what his thoughts are as it relates to that issue. Also, folks, this tropical storm Imelda out there in Texas, one of the mayors said, this makes Harvey look like a thunderstorm. That's not good, because Harvey heaped billions of dollars of damage in the greater Houston area. That storm continues to sit on top of them and is dumping records amount of rainfall. We may be impacted by that as well. The southwestern corner of the state of Louisiana obviously is, and we'll be giving you the latest on that situation as it begins to reveal itself and we're made aware of it because it's something that we need to keep our eye on. And our thoughts and prayers to all of the folks out there in the Galveston and South Texas area as they face this challenge. We'll be right back.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.